Right.
Okay, I just got word. Sounds like we're ready to go in the chambers. Is that right? Do we have someone there?
Yep. Yes, we're ready to go. Can you hear
Welcome
me?
Welcome to our meeting of Board of County Commissioners. And as usual, we'll begin by looking to those who are in attendance for a volunteer to give a prayer, reading, or thought, and someone to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Do we have anyone?
I don't see any volunteers.
All right, bring it back to the commission. Happy to all lead all.
We can't hear you very well. It's kind of scratchy.
Sorry, Commissioner Lee, are you talking to me?
Yeah.
You have a hard time hearing me.
It was kind of scratchy. That's a lot better, whatever happened.
Okay.
Oh, great. Okay. So, Commissioner Ivey, your phone was really scratchy, so you're muted right now, just so you know.
Okay.
Okay.
Our Father in heaven, we're grateful for all of our many blessings. We're grateful to gather in this meeting as a community. We are grateful for the beauties that we have in our area, for the mountains that we're surrounded by, for the service that's offered by so many people in our community. We're mindful of those who are sick and struggling, and we continue to pray for guidance and direction in making good decisions and helping to solve the problems that we face together, and that we can have a spirit of unity to do so. And we say these things in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
All right, I'll lead us in the pledge. If you'd please stand for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Commissioner Lee, you went silent there in the chambers. Can you just confirm you guys are?
Yeah, we're back on. It did go silent for a second, and I think the video kind of hesitated for a second. We're back.
Okay, great. Okay, we'll now go through the process of building our agenda. Anything that is not held for discussion will be approved as it is on our consent agenda. We have 14 published consent items and 20 items published on the regular agenda. I don't have anything to hold until item 13 on consent. Anyone else have anything else?
I don't have any additional.
Okay, so hold that on consent. Turning to regular agenda. Is there anything folks would like to hold?
Deneen, do we need to hold number 12 for any explanation? Or are we good just to let it stay on consent?
I'm happy to answer questions. I don't know legally
okay.
If that's required or not.
I'm fine with leaving it on consent. I just was giving you an opportunity. Number 15 and number 16 I'd like to hold.
Okay, we'll hold 15 and 16. Okay, anything else, Commissioner Ivey?
Nothing for me, thanks. That works.
Okay, we will move to consent agenda item number 13. And I know that we have some from the city of Provo on the line. I saw that Isaac Paxman was on earlier.
Yes, Isaac Paxman is on the line.
Okay, great. I guess we'll turn some time to you, Isaac, to give any overview that you have on this item or questions or things that you want to present.
Sure. Thank you very much. We're very excited about this project and very appreciative of the support we've received from the Tourism Tax Advisory Board and from the commissioners. I think the commissioners know, but this is a regional sports park, a soccer field that will have presently planned for 22 soccer fields. This is one that will hold host competitions, hopefully from around the nation. There's been a lot of interest in hosting large tournaments in our area, but there's never been an opportunity to do so because we just don't have enough fields. So this could be a real game changer for the long haul for not just Provo, but the county. And we've been working with the commissioners to negotiate the terms. And we've got a deal on the table that we think is a reasonable compromise and accomplishes everything that everybody wants to accomplish. And so we're hopeful that you can give us your final vote here and let us get to work on this project. It's estimated that the economic impact from this, when you bring a large tournament in, we're expecting even 75 team tournaments can be handled here. You think of 75 teams and how many kids and parents that is for sometimes a four-day tournament. This is going to be just a great asset for the community, and it's going to be a great economic driver. So we're excited. The estimates are in the tens of millions of annual economic impact to the region. So unless there are any questions, we've circulated a version this afternoon that we think has support. So we're hopeful that we can see that signed off.
Okay, appreciate that, Isaac. Yeah, and for those listening, I think that that's fair representation. I think the TTAB board was very excited about this as they approved it. It when you heard Mr. Paxman reference negotiations, I think that the most biggest part of that was just the timeline. I know that there was so much excitement that we've been having a discussion with the city of Provo of exactly what the deadlines are and how we can make that happen soon. And I know there's some reasons of cost and where you're getting the resources that are making this go out a little bit further than I think was anticipated on the TTAB board, but appreciate Provo's efforts to kind of work to get this contract here where it's at today. I have one comment to the contract that was sent over. I know that on our agenda system, we had a previous draft. So I don't know where the other commissioners want to work off of. If we wanted to work off of the draft that was circulated by Provo City, I just have one comment to that. But I guess I'll just pause. Any comments from commissioners?
Yes.
I didn't have anything with the latest either. Any comments?
Yeah, and I'm the same way with the latest version that was emailed that we have copies with. I'm fine with it.
Okay. My one thought. Let's see, Anthony, are you on the line as well?
Yes, I'm right here.
So when I just saw that the changes, I liked, you know, what they did, and there's these completion requirements in section 4. And I basically, want to just clarify here in halfway down through section 4, it does say December 31st, 2026. But then it says any changes to the attached development plan that would result must be approved. And then it goes into this next sentence. If Provo doesn't complete the field as required by this section, I would just like to add after that, by the December 31st, 2026 deadline. Well, actually, and this is what I'm confused about. In section three, it looks like December 21st, 2025 is the deadline. And so maybe we can talk about is there a disconnect here, or how do those two dates?
I can speak to that if you'd like, Commissioner.
Yeah.
So we have until December 31, 2025 to get to spend the money that the county's offering to us, and even to get reimbursed by the county. So that's one deadline. That was one the county wanted. We could certainly move that back if we'd like, but then we just have one extra year to actually get the darn thing totally done. So, you know, if it brings more consistency to move the paragraph three date back a little bit, we could. I don't think it'll make any difference. I think we're going to use the entire 2.5, frankly, well before December 31st, 2025. So I think it's fine as it sits, but that's what's at play there.
Well, and from our conversation, Isaac, I think you should point out that you're trying to get the dirt from a project, and that project is a Delta restoration project. And with that, I mean, there's a lot of unknowns, and I think it's wise for us to have those two dates in there just for on a completion basis, just so that things can happen, as they often do in construction, and especially when you're dealing with other entities and you're hoping that they come through.
And my understanding was that because the project is going to be well above the $2.5 million, that we were going to keep the 2025 date because they will use our money before they anticipate completion. They just wanted to have another year just so that way, in case they couldn't, you know, because of those issues with the dirt and other issues, that they have another year to actually complete the project. Now, moving it so they're both 2026, if you want to do that, that's also fine as well. It just gives them another year to collect the $2.5 million.
That wasn't the point I was making. I was just trying to understand that, you know, now
the difference
is, well, the completion, what's odd is, I think normally the way we do this is that they cannot apply for reimbursement until the project has been completed, right?
Oh, I see what you're talking about now.
So, like,
yeah.
The city of Lehigh just agreed to this where, you know, not only does it have to be completed, but a certain, like, the way they described it to the TTAB with the set number of parking has to be in place and completed before they get reimbursed. So this is a little bit of a departure from that form. It sounds like, though, that we still have, it's a little different than we've done it, but we still have the ability, so we basically reimburse them, but if they end up not completing the project, then they need to.
The burden's on us to collect it.
They will.
Yeah, we won't default on that obligation. If we miss our deadline and owe the money back, you won't have to do a lot of collection activity to get it from us. We'll be good on our obligation.
Well, I mean, it says in section four too that if Provo doesn't complete the fields as required, that they forfeit that and the funds will be reimbursed, should be repaid back to the county. So, I mean, that's in there as well, that this project is completed.
And you're right, Tanner. In certain contracts, we do say that once the project is completed, then they will reimburse us. We'll do the reimbursement afterwards. But there are some, like the UCCU bleachers, when they incurred expenses, they submitted reimbursement during the project, and then we would reimburse them as they provided documentation. So this one was drafted under that type of model, where as they incurred expenses, they would just submit the receipts to us, and we would reimburse them up to the limit. But we can do either way, whichever the board prefers.
And if I can speak, though, boy, that would be a tough curveball for us. We're really excited to have some revenue that we can start using on this. You're not going to be left holding the bag. Provo City's not going to, you know, stick it to you if we don't complete our obligations. But this would be really unfortunate for me to have to go back and change the landscape at the last hour with our Parks and Rec department. That's, you know, we'd sure appreciate it with what we've been talking about all this time.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's why we also have these meetings. I think it's sometimes what we've been talking about may not have been crystal clear, but like, I agree that this all works. I guess the point, though, Anthony, is that the other reason why we have this is just to make sure that there's an implied match, right? So we don't want to have the county dollars going out, you know, if they're like the only dollars, and then there's risk of not completion. I know that these are relatively, this is a relatively small amount of the overall project, right? So maybe it's not in the agreement, but I'm sure it's all, this is already built into the plan. And Isaac, maybe you can speak to this, that it's not like the county is, or the city of Provo is first just drawing down these dollars. One, I know the city's already in to this project quite a bit, but you'll be drawing down on city funds at the same time? Or how can we ensure, you know, in this framework, that the idea that this comes with a lot of city matching dollars actually takes place?
I mean, we've already, we've secured a 100-acre parcel of property at great expense, sped it up because of our conversations with the TTAB, and made it happen because of the sort of thumbs up from the county that this was a go. So we risked and bought a 100-acre parcel. We've negotiated with the Delta Restoration folks on a project that really is, the value is about $5 million, I'm told, of what we're getting. Because we're in a floodplain, and you've got to build up something like 6 feet of dirt over that 100 acres. It's a lot of dirt, and it gets expensive with that kind of scale. The mayor, because of the prioritization that I would attribute really to you, Commissioner Ainge, that you've given by putting this hard deadline on it, the mayor is convening a internal department head committee to make sure we meet this commitment. And so we're going to have to move some stuff around. We're going to have to do some changing of, because we're going to have public works in there doing, you know, pipes and roads. And there's a lot of work here. So yeah, Provo, Utah County will not be the largest by any means contributor to this. And Provo City is going to have to put a lot of resources to this to make this happen. And if we don't, then we write you a check for $2.5 million at the end of this. And it's inconceivable to me we will let that happen.
So, and yeah, that's really looking at my notes, Commissioner Ainge, it looks like the acquisition costs were projected to be about $3.7 million just for the land, and then the construction costs are around $15 million. The two ways we could address this is, one, we could either include a whereas provision. Sometimes we do that, where it just says that it's anticipation of this. If you want to be stronger, we could have it be a percentage of the invoices up to that dollar amount.
I appreciate that, Anthony. I think that Isaac has answered it. I just wanted to check that out of, like, you know, the requirement to complete implies an enormous city contribution.
Yep.
So, I think we're covered. Appreciate you, Isaac, explaining that on here. And, you know, I'm not suggesting any changes to this document either at this point. Okay. If there's, I don't know if the other two have any other conversations. If not, then I would entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve and authorize the signing of the agreement. I'll stipulate that it's the emailed agreement, the second agreement that was sent to us from Anthony Lube between Provo City and Utah County for the Provo Regional Sports Park Complex.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve consent agenda item number 13 as stated. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. That passes 3-0. Okay, we move to, let's see, by my notes, is it regular agenda item number 15?
Yes.
Okay.
And commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to spend a little bit more time reading through it. I think this, from Tanner, you're the one sponsoring this and moving it forward, is commendable. There's a lot of great work that could be done there. I have, in there, it does talk about who's on the committee. And I was wondering if we couldn't entertain adding two more onto that committee, somebody from the public defenders and possibly a retired judge, to also be on that committee to work with the group. And then when I was reading down through it, I noticed on a report, kind of on a report mechanism on section 4-B, it talks about the report will be given on an annual basis on expenditures. But I would also like to see some sort of process report, maybe on a semi-annual basis, on what the findings are and what we're finding, as it's kind of moving along along the way, come to a work session or to a commission meeting and just kind of see what some of the things are being found as we're moving along through the through this process as well.
I think those are great suggestions. The one thing is that I'm just trying to look through here. I'm worried about the timing, since we're on the 30th, and I know this was pre-approved by UVU Legal, but I think that's great. And just so you know, and you're aware this happened, somewhat last minute to try to get this approved this year with 2020 funds. And so I did have a chance to speak with the county attorney's office and the sheriff's department. And my intention was that there's going to be others that are appointed here. I think public defenders is a great one to be on there. I also think there's also certain other nonprofits that should have representation on this board. But one distinction I think is important to make is that I think this is a UVU administered board, right? It's not a county government administered board. So, but we can still make those recommendations that those people be a part of it. I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, I'm just looking at a cross section, and I appreciate that. And I think that, you don't want committees so large that they become really unwieldy. But in looking at it, I think that a perspective from the public defender's office would be probably appreciated, and then a retired judge would probably lend to a lot of kind of that crossover that I think would be needed, and can give a perspective that it would be different or very helpful, in especially as we're looking through it from their perspective of it.
So one question that I have for, I don't know if it's Paul or Dave Chakra, is the public defender's office should absolutely be consulted, should be providing their data to this initiative. I know that sometimes it can be awkward if we have, and there's just some professional ethics obligations we have to be very mindful of when we have the county attorneys on the prosecutor's side in the meeting and providing data and the public defenders. And so I don't know if that's accomplished through separate ad hoc kind of committees to make sure that they each have touch points, but is that a concern to anyone of having a member of each on this board?
I don't see a real problem there. I think that would work fine, or it's just this board to investigate a better way to handle the justice system. I don't believe that there would be any conflict, but we could specify that it include a member of the public defender's office to the extent they are willing and able to so serve.
Okay.
And that would be true for a retired judge as well. We can't compel anybody to be on the committee, and so maybe it's not necessarily a name, but it may be that the group could convene even without those two. But if there's an opportunity there to have them on board, that would be, I think there's benefit to it.
And we could reword that to part of the agreement where just instead of allowed to appoint, we could say allowed to appoint up to six members to the committee. and then add those two additional positions to the extent that they're able and willing to do so.
I think that'd be great. I like all of those suggestions. And then I think his other suggestion was that, I mean, maybe we keep it loose for now, because I know, just some background, I know that UVU is, there's a mutual benefit here, but I think we have to be mindful of, this is not simply them producing a bunch of work for us, right? In fact, a lot of the work is going to be done by county leaders. You know, I'm going to go there. I'm going to try to help coordinate any data they can. I know the county attorney's office will go, and I know the sheriffs and public defenders will go and help get this data. They also will provide interns and faculty and to help do this research. And but then their goals are, yes, they want to help the community, and I think they want to help solve these problems, but they will, on a confidential basis, use it for research purposes, and we will use it, to your point, Commissioner Lee, for policy purposes. It's important for us as policymakers to see what's going on. And so I know there's going to be a process where they're defining roles of who is doing the research and collecting the data. So maybe, Dave, if you could just make it vague that a member or a representative from the board will provide, you know, Commissioner Lee, maybe you could suggest the language, but it sounds like an update or an account, a reporting of findings to the commission in a work session. Or Commissioner Lee, what would you suggest?
I mean, I'm just looking for you know, a process report. I don't necessarily think we need to get down to a granular level with it, but it would give us an idea of, on for reporting purposes, just what's being found to a certain extent, and maybe a 30,000 foot level of these are the things that are coming up, and here's maybe some of the obstacles and challenges that we're running into, or here's some of the successes that we're seeing, and just kind of give us an overview of direction and where it's headed, and the successes or failures that we're seeing in throughout the system. I don't necessarily, if we thought that there was a certain confidential level to it, Dave, I don't know if we can move it into a closed meeting or not, if that would be appropriate with our guidelines there, but maybe we could.
We'd have to look at that probably later on. But so do you want that on an annual basis or every twice a year?
Well, I mean, this is a two-year deal to start with, and so I would think that the first 6 months would be kind of critical to see kind of where it's going, and then if you had it on an annual basis, it would seem odd to do that, because you go 6 months, then the 6 months is the annual, and then you go to the next annual. So I would just think it'd be easier to just do it on a semi-annual basis for the first 2 years.
We could just add then an additional sentence on that section 4B. We could just put, in addition, on a semi-annual basis, UVU shall provide a report to county with a summary of the findings, progress, and recommendations.
Yeah, and I think that'd be good. I mean, this money is taxpayer dollars, and I think they'd like to have a report on kind of how it's being used, and I think that would be important to have that out there, that we are, that it is moving forward.
Great.
And, you know, another thought on the public defender or the retired judge, I think your wording is fine on that, Dave, you know, to put that in there, but it might come down to the committee that's already formed, you know, to kind of reach out there and get those other two members, if needed, or you know, if they can find, if and when they could actually serve on that committee.
Well, we could just put to the extent feasible, or to the extent such appointments are. Well, I think we're okay with that prior language, because it was up to,
okay,
yep, six members.
All right.
Okay, great. So maybe that's a convoluted motion, but I think those are some good suggestions, and I would entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve and authorize the grant agreement between Utah County and Utah Valley University for the SMARTS grant, for Smart Justice Initiative grant. And we're working off the second one, right? The most updated version. We're working off that one with the noted changes when it comes to the committee and to the reporting.
I've got a motion. Do I have a second? I kind of feel like I'm talking to R2-D2.
There's a note here that says that Commissioner Ivey is trying to speak.
Second.
There we go.
Okay, I got it. I heard that.
Can you hear me?
All right, we got a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Trying to hear Commissioner Ivey's vote. And I know he supports it, but I'm not sure I can count that. We know it passes.
You could just hold it open until he gets back connected and then record his vote if you'd like, or it passes 2-0. Either way you'd like to do it.
See, hang on 1 second. They're looking at this.
He was on. He just barely went off.
He's
trying to call back in.
He's disconnected right now, probably trying to call back in.
So do we call that unanimously if we now have a quorum of two?
I guess you could probably better record it 2-0.
He still hasn't called back in.
Okay. We're going to move on. We're going to say that passes 2-0. Okay. And then Commissioner Lee, I believe that you held item 16.
Yeah, item 16, we had discussions about this some time ago. And from my perspective, we gave, or at least from my conversation, there was two positions that were being looked at. The one position was a senior position. This other position was a different position, more of a senior staff specialist.
I tried the calling. Can you hear me better now?
Oh, now we can hear you now.
Okay. Yeah. For some reason, I was like seconding and no one was responding to me, so I don't know what was going on. Okay.
We called that last one a vote of passing 2-0 on the Smart Justice Initiative. I don't know if you want to reflect your vote.
I was definitely a yes on that one. So
great.
Okay.
Thank you. So, and now
I was saying it.
Okay, great. And now we've moved on to item 16, and Commissioner Lee was just talking about item 16, which is the office specialist position in the clerk auditor's office.
And so with that one, I was comfortable moving along with one of those positions, which we did move along with that more senior position. And that one I think is either being filled or filled at this time. I'm not sure. And this one here, I mentioned that if we're going to go with that one, I would be voting no on this one. And I just brought it up. We did have that conversation and I think that we need to go through our process being that we had conversations with it, and in my opinion, it was just my opinion that there was one or the other, and they picked the other position, and so I was comfortable going that way, and so this one I'm not comfortable with.
Okay. This one has been a hard one for me, mostly because there's been a lot of different conversations that over the past few weeks, you know, obviously we all haven't seen eye to eye. I've been supportive of some restructuring of the commission office, but it also had some interplay with the clerk auditor's office. And so for that reason, I had kind of put this on the back burner. I don't know if we intend to continue having a conversation about some coordinating type of person on the, in that capacity, even at the commission level. I do know that there's a need for this. I don't know if it's the most immediate need in the clerk auditor's office. I know that they're hiring the other position that you're referencing, Commissioner Lee. And so, and then they're going to have a vacancy in another position shortly that I know they can then rehire. And so I'm not sure I understand the urgency. I'm certainly open to having Amelia. I see Amelia's on, and Josh.
I'm on as well. I'd love to speak to it if you give us a chance.
Great. Yeah.
So I'm not sure what the other position is that you are referring to, Commissioner Lee. I don't know if maybe this position is being thought of in the context of the sort of administrative position that was talked about at previous meetings, which is more a position under the commission, or if somebody's thinking about other finance positions. Let me just clarify what this position is. This is an administrative office position that will support the day-to-day functions of the clerk auditor department as a whole. So if I give you a little bit of data, as you look at positions throughout the county and you look at positions that have the term office in them, so office specialist, senior office specialist, office manager, those types of positions. You could also look at positions that are sometimes called administrative associate. There are about 50 positions like that in the county, and the county has 1,000 employees. So for every 20 employees in the county, there's a position that is sort of financial administrative position. These are mid-level positions. These are not finance officer, finance manager, finance director. These are day-to-day office logistic administrative type positions. These are oftentimes the folks that enter requisitions, that keep track of grant funding, that keep track of some of the day-to-day kind of finance and budget operations for each department. So if you then look at the clerk auditor's department, we don't have a single position in our department that does that. We have one administrative associate, and that person directly spends all their time supporting the function of the commission meetings and the signing of county contracts. We don't have a single person in the clerk auditor department who is dedicated to entering requisitions, tracking the use of state and federal grant monies for elections or any of those kinds of things. We did in 2020 redirect the efforts of one of our election positions, the voter outreach coordinator, whose position was mostly supposed to be that of a project manager in election operations and also an outreach to the public in terms of public communication, public information, response to public records requests, compliance with election notices and posting of election notices. We redirected that person's efforts in 2020 to deal with some of the day-to-day business management of the election operation. And so if you look at some statistics, that particular person entered nearly in 2020, 1,000 requisitions, which amounts to over 10% of all requisitions entered by any employee in the county in 2020. For comparison, a similar position in another department, I won't necessarily point out the who and the who, but there's at least two departments where the person in that department who enters requisitions entered somewhere in the neighborhood of 350 in a year. So we have a position that is an elections position that entered three times the number of finance requisitions for purchases in a given year. And that person is actually leaving. You know, we're happy for them. They've got a different, better position. We'll have to fill their position, but their position is not business manager. Their position is not designed to enter requisitions. They sort of did that for us in a pinch during a really tough year. And, you know, obviously future years will hopefully be different. But But so this position that we're talking about, the senior office specialist for the clerk auditor's department, is a person who will be entering requisitions for the department, dealing with day-to-day administrative tasks to support the operations of the department. When you look at an FTE basis, full-time equivalent, the clerk auditor's department has about 50 employees. That's 37 full-time permanent with a number of other part-time employees. For comparison, in the 2020 election, we had over 100 temporary employees that worked the election. And each one of those employees requires a separate requisition to be entered in the system to get their paycheck. So there's a very large day-to-day administrative burden in our department and nobody to fill that burden. So that's the purpose of this position. You know, that's some of the numbers that back up the workload that we think supports the need for this position. This position would also serve as a support mechanism to the accounting department. We had contemplated the need to add an additional accountant. If you go back 4 or 5 years in county history, there was actually a period of time we had 4 full-time employees working on a day-to-day basis on our accounting tech team. That would be 2 to 3 accounts payable clerks and 1 accounts receivable clerks. Today, we only have 2 accounts payable clerks and 1 account receivable clerk. And so there was a position that sort of disappeared about 4 years ago, and we've seen the burden increase on our accounting team as well. So we're trying to be very methodical and targeted with finding kind of the right way to fill the gap of day-to-day administrative office operations and you know, the right way to fill that. I think an office specialist is the right position. They can act as a support for the accounting and finance team, but that's the nature of this position. And so I don't know if there's any questions about that to kind of clarify, but
The conversation, and unfortunately, you weren't there for all the conversations that we had with the office. But it came down to, and you'll remember, there was a time when the senior, I think it was a financial, I can't remember the title, but there was those this position and the other position I think is being hired right now, that came before us, and we originally said no to the first request, and then it came back again. And Amelia came in and spoke with us, and that's when the questions came up. And we said, "Okay, if you're going to take one of these, which one is your higher priority?" And she said, "Well, we want this senior person first, and then we'll work through this process and look at it." And I said, "Okay, I'm comfortable with saying, okay, let's move forward with this one, because originally I was saying, why don't we hire from, you know, on the lower end first and then bring it up." But let's go ahead and hire this upper one. After we had conversations, I had conversations with Danine as well. And so I said, let's hire the upper level one, and then we'll work through this process and get a better, firmer grip on what's going on before it comes before us. And so it was a choice of which one do you want this year? Which one is it? And it was determined that the one that we already put into the staffing plan was that one. So with seeing this one coming up so soon in the process, to me, I already mentioned that I was comfortable going with the one and not the other.
So we've also had, this is Amelia, we've had changes in our department since then. Like Josh mentioned, the person that put in 1,000 requisitions, so like 100 times more requisitions than the commission office puts in, the person who put that in is leaving the county, and their job description in nowhere does it say they put in requisitions. They just happened to do that in 2020. As that person leaves and gets a promotion to go to another county, we are going to backfill them with someone to become the voter outreach coordinator, which will leave us a gap in our department. And the voter outreach coordinator is very much needed to do the community outreach, to do the voter education that we weren't doing in 2020, because we couldn't go out to the community. We couldn't go onto college campuses. We couldn't go into the rest homes. We couldn't go into neighborhoods and these new growth neighborhoods and register those people to vote. So that work was redeployed. When I came to you originally, we didn't know we were going to have that gap on our team. So what's happened, and not only that, but I didn't realize at the time that this person had put in 1,000 requisitions, 3 times more than equivalent positions that I'm asking for in other departments. And so since then, what we've come to realize is that we do significantly more work at this level than other departments. We now are going to have a gap in in our staff as we go through. And so that's where the development comes. That's why the change, and that's why this has come back up so soon, you know, a month or two later, because of that.
Well, and that's fine, but maybe we should have some more conversation with it, because all I see is this. Everything that you brought up is brand new to me. We haven't had that conversation, any of those conversations. And so when I see it this way, I just remember where we were at before. And if there needs to be further conversations, maybe we should have those further conversations as we, you know, try to.
Well, that's what we're having right now.
Well, I mean, not just conversations here, but we often will have conversations, you know, with Ralph, with ourselves, and even behind the scenes, you know, we have conversations in our offices about it, not just thrown on for a vote right now without all the information that I'd like to see. I'd like to see all that stuff that you're, and have Ralph work down through it as well, and come with a proposal or a thought as well on what he sees when it comes to the staffing level.
Well, and his recommendation a month ago was that we needed this position, and it's become even more necessary now. So a month ago, Ralph came in and said we needed this position, and he saw it. And since then, it's become even more, it's become even more prominent because of development in our department.
Well, maybe we should hold this one then to our, you know, for the next meeting, so that we can have, you know, some further conversation with it, because obviously we have a disconnect on information.
I mean, I see the need for this role. I appreciate Josh and Amelia explaining the need. So I don't know if Commissioner Ivey has thoughts.
I mean, I see the need for the position, so I mean, it's
okay. I mean, I would entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we continue item number 16 to our next commission meeting.
Looks like that one's going to die for lack of a second. I will go ahead and move to approve the staffing plan change as mentioned in regular agenda item number 16.
And I'll second for the vote.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve item number 16. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
That passes 2-1. Okay. Do we have a need for any of the closed meetings?
Just the litigation is the only one I'm aware of.
Okay. I would entertain motions on the closed meetings.
I'll make a motion that we strike agenda items 17, 18, and 19.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to strike 17, 18, and 19. All in favor say aye.
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 I'll make a motion that we approve and set a date, time, and location for a closed meeting as stated number 20 at this location following the completion of our regular agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second for item 20. All in favor say aye.
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 That passes 3-0. We don't have any work session. Do we have any general public comment?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark Allen, Protect and Preserve American Mauritania. R2D2 is live. Just would like to take a moment and thank Commissioner Ivey for leading out on the preservation of Bridal Veil Falls, for Wendy Fisher, Utah Open Trust Lands, and her staff, for Deputy Attorney Robert Moore, for County Attorney David Levitt, and Commissioner Ainge for your leadership in helping usher that through. Grateful for a unanimous vote from the commissioners on that. I would like to also suggest that as we move forward in 2021, that transparency in the county be increased, that we start to do server-based keyword searches. It's hard to know who all the players are as we go through some of these issues, and if we did server-based keyword searches, Utah County could regain trust in our elected officials. Also, as a comment on that last item that was passed, I'm grateful for the leadership that I'm seeing, but I'm also disturbed that on the December 16th meeting that Commissioner Lee, you're trying to keep the door open for a career position as a commissioner, and I'd ask you to strongly support term limits, as Commissioner Ivey and Commissioner Ainge suggested. I'd like to ask any senators within the sound of my voice to push through legislation to support such. I know what it's like to go from full employment to zero. I would encourage anyone to have a backup plan. Career politicians, we've seen causing problems back in Washington, D.C. I've stood before this commission many times. I'm looking forward to 2021 will be a year of transparency and improved integrity and honesty so our public can increase trust. But that begins at the granular level. And I hope my point is well taken. I still consider you, Commissioner Lee, a friend, and Brian a friend. Balls in your court as to how you consider me. But I'm grateful that we did preserve Bridal Falls, and I hope that we can preserve other open spaces. The Equestrian Park up next. Thank you.
Do we have any additional public comment?
This is Brian Vokes. I would like to make a public comment.
Okay.
I just want to express my appreciation to Commissioner Lee for his tremendous integrity, honesty, hard work. He's worth every penny that the taxpayers pay him. He is, I see all the time some of the very unfair attacks that are levied at him. It's not right, but that's part of the job, part of being a public servant, and I think he handles that well. So I just want to, again, publicly thank Commissioner Lee for all he does on behalf of the good people of Utah County. So thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Do we have any additional public comment?
Yeah, this is Amelia. And I just wanted, as a public comment, to just thank Commissioner Ivey for his service and for the work that he did since this will be his last commission meeting. As a citizen prior to becoming an elected official, I appreciated the work he did. As a farmer, I appreciated the understanding that he had of the agricultural sector of our county. Utah County is the biggest exporter of agriculture in the state of Utah, and a lot of people don't realize it. And I think his understanding of the unincorporated, of the water rights, of the farmers, and of the agricultural sector, which is a huge part of our county that gets overlooked often, I think that was invaluable to us. And as a farmer, I appreciated that. And then now as an elected official, I've appreciated working with him and his staff and their professionalism, and I wanted to thank him for his service.
Thank you, Amelia. I appreciate you, your staff, all the county employees, and all the hard work that's gone into to making your office in particular so much better this year.
Thank you for those comments. I echo them. Do we have any additional public comment?
I guess I'll just make one comment, and that's just thank you. Happy to move on to the next sector. If you've got a horse that needs training, I know a really good guy. And we're thankful for the opportunity to serve and look forward to the future. Thank you to everyone, especially the employees. It's been my pleasure to work with you, and I will cut it short so I don't get too teary, because we have some of the best people in the world that work at the county.
Amen. We appreciate you, Commissioner Ivey, and all you've done. Okay. Seeing no additional public comment, I would entertain, well, we will move into our closed meeting. Thank you.
Goodbye.
It's recording on. Okay, the recording's back on.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are now adjourned.